remember where you were on July 20th, 1969? I don't. Mostly because I hadn't been born yet. My name's Chris Reed, and I'm one of the neighborhood pastors here at Christ Church, and it's an honor to be here tonight with you. But some of you remember July 20th, 1969, right? Anyone? If you were alive and you could remember things that day, what I'm guessing you saw was something that had never been seen before. Two men in spacesuits walking on the moon. Anybody remember that? Buzz Aldrin and Alan Shepard on July 20th, 1969, landed on the moon, walked around, came home. One of the most incredible feats ever accomplished by men. This summer, my family and I were on vacation. We took our kids to the Space Center in Houston, Texas. It was a really cool place. We saw some of the equipment, some of the actual things used on that mission. We got to go in mission control, the same room that controlled the mission those guys took. It was an amazing experience to sit and look and think about what happened so many years ago there. What we also learned was if you have a cell phone, you have more computing power in your pocket than Mission Control had that day in 1969. I don't know how we sent someone to the moon without an iPhone, but but we did it. There was no Go to Moon app in those days. How did that happen? Was it a miracle? No, it wasn't a miracle. It was a mission. You see, on May 25th, 1961, 8 years earlier, President Kennedy stood before a joint session of Congress, and this is what he said. He said, "Well, I believe this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon, returning him safely to Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important to the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish." You have to realize when President Kennedy said those words, we'd only sent one person into space about a month earlier. No one had ever even orbited the Earth at this time. Answering President Kennedy's challenge and landing men on the moon by the end of 1969 required the most sudden burst of technological creativity and innovation, the largest commitment of resources any country had undertaken in peacetime in the history of the world. The Apollo project, at its height, employed 400,000 people and cost $24 billion, which today would have been well over $170 billion. It was a huge mission. I think there was three things to me that stood out to this mission. One, it was clear. He stood up and said, in 8.5 years, we're going to the moon, people. It was clear what he meant. It was challenging. Yes, going to the moon would be challenging. But it was compelling. It was a very compelling mission. It sparked creativity, pride, passion. It captivated our nation. He said this a few months later in Houston, Texas. He said, "We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one we are willing to accept and unwilling to postpone. And one we intend to win and the others too. Therefore, as we set sail, we ask God's blessing on the most hazardous and dangerous and greatest adventure on which man has ever embarked." Do you hear his passion? You hear his conviction? He set forth a mission that captivated our entire nation. The idea of going to the moon, it really doesn't seem that far-fetched to you and I anymore, does it? But think about it at that time. It'd be like telling us today, in 8.5 years, we're going to live on Mars. That doesn't sound very realistic, does it? It was a compelling mission. Does it sound equally far-fetched to talk about different missions to say, in a certain period of time, this entire city will be following Jesus Christ passionately? Does it sound as far-fetched to you as going to the moon did then, to say everyone in your neighborhood will know Christ and live for him? Well, I hope today what we're going to try to do is give you a picture that the mission God has given his church and he's given each and every one of us is just as exciting, just as compelling as that mission was. We started this series with Rethink and looked at the purpose of the church. Why do we exist? What is the point of us being here? And last week, Dr. Garlow rewound and we looked at the history of the church. And today we're gonna have the opportunity to react. To react to this mission that God has put before us. So let us talk about that. The mission of the church. What is the mission of the church? I think it's simply found in Matthew 28. It's a familiar passage. It's in your notes if you want to read along. It says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded." You see, Jesus has died. He's rose again. He spent about a month with his followers, and he's about to leave them behind to carry out the mission he started. And he leaves these words. It's called the Great Commission. And he says, "This is what I want you to do. This is our mission." Here at CCV, we've simplified this to just very, I think, simple words that we can all understand. The words win, train, send. We take this passage that Jesus told us and all the things that he said, this is what I want you to be about. And we've given him words we can remember. He says, make disciples, baptizing those who don't know Christ. That's win. That's what we mean when we say win. He says, teaching them to obey the commands of Christ. That's train. That's what we're talking about. When you hear that term train around here. And then the easiest one is we use the word send. Win, train, send. In your scripture, it's just the word go. He said, go and make disciples. We're being sent on his behalf everywhere we go to accomplish this mission. You see, I think as we look at this mission, I want to show you three very important characteristics today. First, our mission is clear. Well, we just read it, it's clear, and clarity is important if we're going to accomplish our mission, right? We need to know what we're supposed to do. And here's what happens. A lot of times we read the Bible, read something Jesus said, and we go, what does he mean by that? You know, he speaks in parables and he uses hyperbole, and Jesus doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes. Right here, Jesus makes perfect sense. Absolute clarity. Go and make disciples. Baptize, teach. There's no room for argument. He gave us absolute clarity. Second, our mission is challenging. Oh, it is challenging. See, what seems more difficult to you as you sit here tonight? To go to the moon, walk around, and come back? Or to tell everybody you know about Jesus? To help them become followers of him, doing the things he taught us to do? Well, one of those missions took 8.5 years. The other mission, we're still going. 2,000 years into it, we're still trying to accomplish the mission of Jesus. It is challenging indeed. Third, our mission, it is compelling. Was the mission of the moon compelling? For sure. It captivated the imagination of the entire world. Astronauts were instant heroes. The money, the time, the effort was extraordinary to say the least. The mission to go and make disciples, to baptize, to teach, is it as compelling? Is it as exciting for you? It's going to space or some distant land would be. It doesn't seem that way on the surface, does it? But stop, and if you were here last week, think about what we learned, what we heard about the history of the church. This mission is compelled men and women all over this world, in every time and in every culture, to give of themselves, their lives in many cases, or sacrifice for this mission because it is compelling. The Apostle Paul says it this way, "For Christ's love compels us because we are convinced that one died for all and therefore all died. He died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again." You see, you and I, we no longer live for ourselves. We've been put on a mission. Christ saved us for this mission. He died for our sins so we could accomplish this compelling mission. Now, I have to stop for a second and ask you a question. I'm talking about the church. I'm talking about the church's mission. I just want to make sure we're using the same terms the same way. When I say church, what are you thinking about? What's in your mind? Just when someone says church, what does that mean to you? Is it this room? Is it CCV? Is it Maybe it's the church you picture you grew up in as a child, where you first went to church. Maybe it's just a place where you go and sing songs and hear a sermon. What do you think of when we talk about the church? Well, what I think of is much different than those things. I'll be honest. When I think of the church, I think of you. I think of the people that are sitting here. Look to the person to your left. Just do that for me. That might be painful. I don't know who you're sitting by. Look at the person to your right. The person in front of you, behind you. You are looking at the church right there. You might be looking at the good, bad, or the ugly. I don't know. But you are looking at the church as you look at the people in this room. You and I are the church. The church is not an institution. It's not a building. It is the people of God. So when we're talking about the mission of the church, we're talking about our mission, your mission, my mission. We're talking about your life. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the mission of my life. Ephesians 2, 8 through 10 is one of my, it's one of my favorite verses. This is what Paul says. He says, it is by grace you've been saved through faith. And this is not for yourselves, it's the gift of God. Not by works, so that no man can boast. For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which he has prepared in advance for us to do. That's my mission. That's your mission. You understand this? I can't be more emphatic. This is so important. God did not rescue you so that someday you can spend forever and ever singing songs to him. That is not why he saved you. He could create things that sing way better than you, right? They're angels or whatever. I don't know. I mean, people that sing, I mean, he would make them and they would go sing forever. That's not our point. That's not our purpose. That's not our mission. And we get wrapped up into thinking, God saved us for some far-off reward, for heaven, and this utopian existence way down the road. And that's true. We're going to have that. But he says right here, I saved you to do good. Sometimes we hear that and think, well, I'm supposed to be good. He didn't save us to be good. He saved us to do good. And that's such an important thing we have to understand. We weren't saved for the future. We are saved for a mission. God has chosen you for a mission, so let's look at it. Your mission, my mission, it's clear. It's so crystal clear. He said, we're here to do good works. And there is nothing more good you can do than to tell people about Jesus Christ, to help them know him. That is our mission. The best good we can do is to introduce our friends to Jesus. My mission, your mission, it's challenging. It is very challenging, isn't it? It's just hard. It's really hard. I got an email recently from a couple in our church, Reagan and Natalie Gradke, and they're part of a neighborhood group in the Norterra neighborhood. And they had an event, their group put together a movie night in front of their house, and this is the email they sent me about that night a couple months ago. He says, here's some of the details of the evening, not sure if it's sermon worthy at this point. He said, we had roughly 20 people attend our movie night. More than half were already associated with CCV. It was a great idea and platform for getting to know the neighbors by going door to door to invite them. But most neighbors already had plans for the weekend. We've gotten to know one couple better, but not necessarily from this event. It was just another opportunity to hang out. We're planning on having the event one of the first few weekends when school is back. Having it right before summer was not the best timing. I would say it was a success, but did not get the results we were trying to create. The event in August should be much better. You know, our mission's hard. You do something like that, like this group did. They took the time and the effort to do this movie night and this event. It didn't go exactly the way they wanted, but it's a challenge. They're not giving up. They're going to do it again. They're going to continue to reach out to their neighbors and get to know them because our mission, it's challenging, but if you're committed to it, you'll keep going through the challenge. Third, our mission, it's compelling. My mission, your mission, it's compelling. When we really understand what it means, this mission that we're on, the mission of our church, of each of us, we are compelled. I heard a great story of how compelling this is. There's a man in our church by the name of Trey Hughes. And God started to work on Trey, and Trey realized that there was friends that he had that didn't know God, that were far from him. One of his best friends is a guy by the name of Peter Grover. And Trey went to Peter and said, "You're going to church with me next weekend." He ordered him to church. It worked. Try it with your friends. It works sometimes. Peter came to church, started coming more often. And after a few months, he said, "I want to get baptized," and asked Trey to be a part of his baptism. Then Peter and Trey decided, you know what, there's this guy we know where we golf. He looks like he's struggling. His name's Cody. See, these guys said, we got to take what we have. We got to go find Cody and give it to him. It compelled them. The mission is compelling. So Trey and Peter went and found Cody. This is what Peter said about the whole process. He said, Trey started a domino effect, and Cody and I continued to try and find new dominoes to add. Isn't that a great picture of what God does in our lives? Is he compelled one person to share with another who's compelled to share with another. Here's what Peter's wife wrote to me. He said, "I believe Trey's friendship with Peter and his eventual invitation to church was the answer to 13 years of prayer. From the time we married, I prayed he'd be a man after God's own heart and a spiritual leader of our home. It took a lot longer than I would have liked, but the transformation of his life, my marriage, us as parents and our family was well worth the wait." The mission is compelling. It moves people not to just take it in for themselves, but to share it with others. And that's what happened. So if our mission is clear and its challenge is compelling, why is it so difficult? There in your notes, I wrote this question: what makes a mission difficult in your life? And I want you just to think about that for a second. Write something down. There are things in our lives that make our mission difficult, aren't they? They stand in the way of where we are, where we want to be. What are those things for you? Write those down. Here's what I want you to do. Take those and hand them to your neighbors. And we're going to evaluate who's got the best ones. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that. But we all have situations and circumstances we think stand between us and the mission. Have you ever found yourself wanting to engage in this mission, to start on it, but you don't know quite what to do? I found myself there. For me, many times I try to live out our mission, the mission God's given me, and I'm successful. Sometimes I fail. About 4 years ago, my family and I moved to a new house, this new development, and we had some neighbors move in after us, right across the street. Their names were Matt and Aaron. It was pretty cool. Right next door to Matt and Aaron were another couple that went to CCV, and down the street even farther was another couple that started to get to know Matt and Aaron and just build a relationship with them. So pretty much they were surrounded. You know, they didn't have a chance. Matt played softball one fall and got to meet a bunch of guys from the church here, and it was just a really cool experience. And I thought, man, this is the time. We kind of mentioned church and the God thing with them, and I thought, this is it right here. We were getting close to the Christmas Eve services, and I said, this is like a slam dunk, right? Christmas Eve. He's played salt, and the whole thing. I was like, this is going to be it. I go over to Matt's house, and we're standing out in front of his driveway one afternoon about 2 weeks before Christmas, and I said, hey, you know, at church, we do these Christmas Eve services, and Matt hadn't been to church in a long time. I said, maybe you guys would like to come. And I was nervous, man. I could hardly talk. I was all shaken, and, you know, I don't know why. And he looked at me. He had this weird look on his face, like I was speaking Chinese or something. And he says, hell no. Why would I ever want to do it? I'm not kidding. That's exactly what he said. And I was just like in shock. I mean, have you ever had that happen, something like that? Unbelievable. Christmas Eve. You can't come to church Christmas Eve. I just walked home, my pastoral tail right between my legs. I started thinking, what else can I do for a career? Because they will not let me work at a church if I can't get my friends to come to Christmas Eve service. Have you ever had an experience like that? I mean, you just thought, this person's ready. They weren't. Thankfully, you know what? The story doesn't end there. About 2 months later, one of the other guys that know Matt that goes to CCV, smarter than me, he bought him a ticket to the dad-daughter dance. and said, here, you and your six-year-old need to come. That night, that dad-daughter dance was the first time Matt ever came in this room. And I realized, you know what, this guy's tough. I mean, I've got to use different tactics with people like this. So I started playing dirty pool. His daughter and my daughter were friends, and she'd come over, and I'd be like, Kylie, do you like church? Have you ever been to church? I did. She'd come over, and I'd be like, Kylie, they play games at church. It's so fun. They have music. They give you candy. Lots of candy, Kylie. And she'd get all excited, and Susie would tell her, yeah, they have candy. It's true. And it was great. And after about two or three, 4 weeks of this, I said, Kylie, tell your mom and dad you want to go to church. I mean, I had to coach her, you know, on what to say when she got back home across the street. Well, really, who could tell a six-year-old no? Your daughter comes home, I want to go to church. So eventually Matt and Aaron came. In April of 2007, Easter Sunday, Matt and Aaron came to service for the first time. I can show you the seats they sat in. It was awesome. They're so excited. And you know what? It was a process. It took 18 months. And they had questions, they had doubts, they had struggles. And 18 months later, on July 31st, 2009, I had the incredible privilege to be a part of their baptism, to help them make a decision to follow Christ with their whole life. You see, guys, this mission is, it's not something that just other people have to do. We have to do this. We have to do this. Our mission, it's clear, it's challenging, but it is compelling. You see, stories like this, what I just shared with you, are happening every week around here. They're happening all the time. God is doing incredible things through you, His church. It is awesome to see the impact we have in this valley, and our goal is to reach this whole valley for Christ. And man, when you hear the stories that I get to hear and the privilege to see the lives that are changed, you realize we are close to accomplishing our mission. We are closer than we've ever been before. I think you and I, we could be a part of something incredible that God's doing. So this question, I can hear it in your mind. So how do I do, what do I do? How do I act this out? How do I act out this mission? What are the steps? What are the things that need to happen? Well, first, I think you need to join a neighborhood group. I really think it's that simple. So in your bulletin, there's a communication card. You fill it out. You put your address, where you live, way to get a hold of you. When we're done, you go outside. There's an information center. You give them that card, and we'll find you an incredible neighborhood group right where you live. It's really that simple. But it isn't, is it? Now, I can hear what you're thinking. I really can. Some of you are thinking this. I've been to a neighborhood group. It was horrible. I don't want to go back. I can hear you thinking that. Some of you are thinking, I don't want to go hold hands with people I don't know. So, and I really don't want to pray out loud. So I'm not going. Thank you. Some of you are thinking, well, I can't really find books and verses in the Bible. That's too uncomfortable. I can hear you. I don't like my neighbors. I'm not going to their house. That might be legitimate. I don't know. Some of you are thinking, you know what? I don't even know what you're talking about. I've never even been. What is that like? I don't know what to expect. That makes me nervous. Well, let me maybe help you out a little bit on some of these things. You went to a group. It didn't work out. I've been to bad neighborhood groups. I've led bad neighborhood groups. Nobody wanted to come. You've got to try again. And you got to try again. This is our mission. You can't give up. You think we're going to hold hands and pray out loud? You don't have to hold hands. If they're holding hands at your group, tell them to stop. Because nobody will come if you're holding hands. And I know some of us are uncomfortable praying out loud. That's okay. Somebody's going to pray out loud. It doesn't have to be you. And if you're not comfortable with that, in all seriousness, you just don't have to do it. You can't find the Bible verses and what it means and where Habakkuk is. That's okay. You know what? After you get to know some people there, ask them for help. Say, explain this to me. We have a foundations class. We go through and show you what the Bible, how it's laid out. Just start opening it up on your own. It's okay. If you don't know how to find everything we're going to talk about in the Bible, you don't like your neighbors? Well, unfortunately, God likes your neighbors. So really too bad. You got to get over that one on your own. You've never been to a group? That is a fair excuse. Let me explain a little bit what happens, maybe what you could expect. You're going to go to a house, it's your neighborhood, you're going to find, you know, 10, 12 people in this home. And they're going to be hanging out, just talking, getting to know each other. After a little bit, somebody will call them together, they'll sit in the living room, they're going to open up a list of questions that we give them and talk about the sermon, talk about what we talk about here at church. Hopefully they have snacks. That's the best part. And really, if you go and they're good snacks, call me. I want to come visit your group. You're just going to hang out. You're going to find a comfortable setting with mostly normal people. And no, you have to realize that. I didn't mean that as a joke. Most of the people will be normal. But any group of 12 people, two aren't, right? You just got to expect it, okay? And if you're sitting in the crowd at the group and you look around and go, everyone's normal, then you're one of the two. So where do you start? You get in the group, okay? It's time to do that. Next week, we're going to have sign-ups. All of our neighborhoods are going to be out. And you'll be able to go and see, okay, what groups work for us? You can fill out the card. You can do that tonight. And we'll find you a group. Here's what I want you to understand. You can come here every week for the rest of your life on the weekend and never live out our mission. This room is not where the mission happens. Do you understand that? The mission happens out there. It happens when we talk to our neighbors. It happens when we talk to our coworkers. It happens in our groups when we put together a movie night in our garage and a few people show up that we don't know. That's our mission. Don't keep coming here every week and think you're a part of the team. You're just watching the team get together and go over the playbook and go out and run the plays. You can come here your whole life, and that's great. We love that you're here. We'd love even more if you got on the team and you joined the mission. Second thing you can do besides join a group is you can help create a new culture. See, your neighborhood has a culture. It has a way things are done, right? Some of us love the neighborhood we live in. Some of us don't. I don't know that you can really change that. All you can really do is create a new culture. Here's what I mean by this. Watch this video from a couple in our church, Mike and Julie Borg, and I want you to listen to the other people in the video as well, and listen to what happened in their neighborhood group.
My name is Mike Borg. This is my wife, Julie. We live in Anthem, and we're part of a neighborhood group.
The neighborhood group has been a huge part of our lives. Ever since we joined, we instantly just connected with the people that were in our group. As we went through the neighborhood group and were meeting every week, one particular Friday we had a doctor's appointment and we knew we were going to find out the sex of the baby, so we were really excited.
That was when we were told that our daughter Eva was going to be born with a condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. That whole week when we had found out that she was going to have a heart defect, meet with all these doctors. We knew God was going to allow things to work out for the better. You know, He's blessed us in so many ways, and I think one of the big ways is through the neighborhood group.
We just rallied around them, and we were going to be there for them in any way that we could. In time, through ultrasounds and other scans, Mike and Julie found out that they will be at the hospital for an extended period of time for Eva's surgeries. And so we found out a tangible way that we could help them, and that would be to bring them meals.
We started out making meals, and then just through emails and whatever other way that she needed us, we were there.
We made it a family outing. She would make dinner, and when I would get home, we'd load the kids up and go down to the hospital and take a road trip downtown. And so we'd go down and just have some family time in the car and talk about our day and go down and pray for the family and give them food. And
through our neighborhood group, just after meeting each other week after week, getting to know each other, and as a need presented itself, we jumped all over it.
They're instantly just on board with us and, you know, just praying and going to be there for us no matter what.
If we need to get stuff from the house or even just coming to visit at the hospital, you know, just knowing they were there that we could count on for stuff like that.
We were just people going to a group, and we didn't know each other that well, and it was after we met Mike and Julie and that crisis happened, and we realized we connected and we became really close, and we were going to be there for each other, and it was almost like we became a family, and we were just going to help each other in any way that we could to help get through this.
It's the faith that Julie had, and knowing that Eva was going to be born and she was going to be healthy, and Mike, they turned it over to God, and through that, you know, we started building our courage, turning more of what we had it over to God.
You feel like you're part of a group where, even though, I mean, it's a very tight group, and now this whole group is our family.
We weren't in a neighborhood group with them, but to know the people that they're surrounded with and just someone in the community, that's a pretty big impact in your life when you can see it helping somebody a couple streets down.
Well, I think being part of a neighborhood group also, I know some people are afraid that CCV might be too big for them. When you are with the neighborhood group, it kind of scales it down and you feel more at home because you're with people that live in your community, in your neighborhood, and you come together on a common ground, and you're able to just understand that CCV is not as big as you really think it is.
From the moment we told them, it was like they were our family right away. The way they supported us and rallied around us, and just offered support and, you know, their prayers every week and those meetings every single week, has really helped me in my walk with God and Christ.
What you didn't hear in that story is that the night that Mike and Julie came and told their group what they'd found out that day on the ultrasound was the fourth time they'd been to that neighborhood group. These weren't their friends forever, but they were a group of people that said, you know, we're going to do things differently. They took their meals at the hospital for 4.5 months. They changed the culture of Anthem. It was a group of people coming together and said, we're going to do whatever it takes to help this couple and their daughter. And they said it, and I heard it over and over again from them. We are now a family. That family, that group is split into two different families. They're two different groups. Mike's this semester going to lead part of that group and be the facilitator there. It's incredible. Ephesians 2 told us we were impacted. We were saved so we could impact others. So you can join a group. You can help create a new culture. The third thing you can do is grab a shovel. You see, the shovel has two purposes. One, that bucket's in case I got too nervous up here. But you could grab a shovel like this one. A little over a week ago on Thursday night, there was a big storm that blew through town. Maybe you remember that. Rain and wind. And the road that I drive home to get into my neighborhood, there's really kind of one way in to our subdivision. There was a hill next to it, and that hill washed across the road. And I didn't think anything of it. Went home, ate dinner. There was mud and rocks, and you kind of just go over it. Well, it kept getting worse. About an hour later, another guy drove over the same spot, but he had a different reaction than I had. See, I intended to go home and just call the county or somebody and say, hey, your road's messed up, you need to fix it. Well, this guy Brian that lives in my neighborhood, he had a different approach. He went home and got a shovel. He went home and got a shovel, and he went back to where all this mud was covering the road. You see it right here. And he started moving the mud. What you can't tell is that that mud and that dirt's about, in its thickest spot, about 6 inches thick. It goes all the way across, at one point, two lanes of this road, and it was 10 or 15 feet wide. It was quite a mess. And actually, as it was getting dark, it was going to become, you know, pretty dangerous for someone to be driving and not see that. So Brian goes and gets a shovel, and he starts scooping dirt by himself. Pretty soon, a couple other guys come out. After that, a few more guys go home and get shovels, and pretty soon, Brian's got a work crew. He's a supervisor now of five people. So it's just like the county ended up doing it. So in about half an hour, these guys move all the dirt and the mud over. They find some barrier, like some caution stuff, and let people know there's trouble here. And they made the road safer. They made an impact. I figured about 100 people drove by while Brian and his crew were shoveling that mud. Five guys came and helped. He made an impact. He changed what was going on in his neighborhood. He saw a need and he met it. I think for you and I, that's what all we got to do sometimes is you just got to go grab the shovel and go start moving the dirt, because it's not always a super complicated or super spiritual thing that needs to be done. Can you change the world? Could you win everyone in your neighborhood to Jesus the next 60 days? I don't know. But I know if you see something needs to be done, you could go grab your shovel and do it. If you see action that needs to be taken, you can take it. Because what I believe is how you react will determine your impact. How you react to this mission will make all the difference of the impact in your life. At the end of your life, your reaction to God's mission will be the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter how long you stayed in your job. It doesn't matter how great your house was or how big your bank account was or your retirement or how incredible your family was. Those things are all fine. How good an athlete you were, how smart you are, how great looking you are, how physically fit you are, none of it matters. The only thing that matters is the impact you make. And our impact is tied to our reaction to the mission. How will you react? Here's what I know. Many times you'll sit in here, you'll hear a sermon like this, and someone challenge you and say these things, and you go, well, you don't know me. That's great. You don't know my situation, my circumstances. Yes, I do. They're just like all the ones of the people we've talked about tonight. We're all the same. We all deal with the same stuff. You see, the people we talked about, they're just real people. They're in your neighborhoods, they're in my neighborhoods, and they're just trying to do simple things to help each other and make this world a better place. And tonight, you get to decide, are you going to join them or keep watching them from the sideline? We're not perfect, we're going to fail, but we need you to be a part of this team. We need you to be a part of this mission. To take up what God has laid out for your life. He has no other plan for you except for the good that he's prepared in advance for you to do. So I hope and pray that you do decide to join the team. That you will sign up either tonight or next week for a neighborhood group and to do that first thing to get involved. Because we're not asking you to do this by yourselves. It's never been asked to be done alone. We do it together. Let's pray. God, we thank you that you did save us, and it's through your grace that we are saved. But you didn't just save us from ourselves or for ourselves. You saved us for this world. God, help us have the courage. Help us to take the steps to join those around us who are like-minded and try to make this world a better place. God, help us react properly to your mission. It's in your son's name that we pray. Amen. Next weekend, we're starting a new series here at CCV, and it's going to be an incredible opportunity these next few weeks for a lot of different things. Our children's and youth ministries will be looking at the same things, the same characters from the Bible. And this isn't going to be your regular old look at people in the Bible, talk about stories. This hero series is going to be a phenomenal way for you to invite your friends and have discussion with your family. I want you to look at this little preview of what's to come next week. You got to admit, that was pretty sweet, right? Yep. Don't come alone. Bring somebody with you. It's going to be a great series. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for being here. God bless you.